Leo Corhan, Reader, Frankenstein.
As I said this, I suddenly beheld the figure of a man, at some distance, advancing towards me with superhuman speed. He bounded over the crevices in the ice among which I had walked with caution. His stature, also, as he approached, seemed to exceed that of a man. I was troubled. A mist came over my eyes, and I felt a faintness seize me, but I was quickly restored by the cold gale of the mountains. I perceived, as the shape came nearer, sight tremendous and abhorred, that it was the wretch whom I had created. I trembled with rage and horror, resolving to wait his approach, and then close with him in mortal combat. He approached. His countenance bespoke bitter anguish, combined with disdain and malignity, while its unearthly ugliness rendered it almost too horrible for human eyes. But I scarcely observed this. Rage and hatred had at first deprived me of utterance, and I recovered only to overwhelm him with words expressive of furious detestation and contempt.
"Devil!"
I exclaimed. "Do you dare approach me? And do you not fear the fierce vengeance of my arm wrecked on your miserable head? Begone, vile insect, or rather stay, that I may trample you to dust, and oh, that I could, with the extinction of your miserable existence, restore those victims whom you so diabolically murdered."
"I expected this reception," said the demon. "All men hate the wretched. How then must I be hated, who am miserable beyond all living things? Yet you, my creator, detest and spurn me, thy creature, to whom thou art bound by ties only dissoluble by the annihilation of one of us. You propose to kill me. How dare you sport thus with life? Do your duty towards me, and I will do mine towards you and the rest of mankind. If you will comply with my condition, I will leave them and you at peace. But if you refuse, I will glut the maw of death until it be satiated with the blood of your remaining friends."
"Abhorred monster, fiend that thou art, the tortures of hell are too mild a vengeance for thy crimes. Wretched devil, you reproach me with your creation. Come on, then, that I may extinguish the spark which I so negligently bestowed." My rage was without bounds. I sprang on him, impelled by all the feelings which can arm one being against the existence of another.
And to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street.
A reindeer and a sleigh. Say, anyone can think of that. Jack or Fred or Joe or Nat. Say, even Jane could think of that. But it isn't too late to make one little change. A sleigh and an elephant, now there's something strange. I'll pick one with plenty of power and size, a blue one with plenty of fun in his eyes, and then, just to give him a little more tone, have a Raja with rubies perched high on the throne. Say, that makes a story that no one can beat when I say that I saw it on Mulberry Street.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
As soon as they had said goodnight to the professor and gone upstairs on the first night, the boys came into the girls' room and they all talked it over. "We've fallen on our feet and no mistake," said Peter. "This is going to be perfectly splendid. That old chap will let us do anything we like."
"I think he's an old dear," said Susan.
"Oh, come off it," said Edmund, who was tired and pretending not to be tired, which always made him bad-tempered. "Don't go on talking like that."
"Like what?" said Susan. "And anyway, it's time you were in bed."
"Trying to talk like mother," said Edmund. "And who are you to say when I'm going to go to bed? Go to bed yourself."
"Hadn't we all better go to bed?" said Lucy. "There's sure to be a row if we're heard talking here."
"No, there won't," said Peter. "I tell you, this is the sort of house where no one's going to mind what we do. Anyway, they won't hear us. It's about 10 minutes' walk from here down to that dining room, and any amount of stairs and passages in between."
"What's that noise?" said Lucy, suddenly. It was a far larger house than she had ever been in before, and the thought of all those long passages and rows of doors leading into empty rooms was beginning to make her feel a little creepy.
"It's only a bird, silly," said Edmund.
"It's an owl," said Peter. "This is going to be a wonderful place for birds. I shall go to bed now. I say, let's go and explore tomorrow. But when the next morning came, there was a steady rain falling, so thick that when you looked out the window, you could see neither the mountains, nor the woods, nor even the stream in the garden.
"Of course it would be raining," said Edmund.
They had just finished their breakfast with the professor, and they were upstairs in the room he had set apart for them, a long, low room, with two windows, looking out in one direction and two in the other.
"Do stop grumbling, Ed," said Susan. 10 to 1, it'll clear up in an hour or so, and in the meantime, we're pretty well off. There's wireless, and lots of books."
"Not for me," said Peter. "I'm going to explore the house."
Everyone agreed to this, and that was how the adventure began.